This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A car bomb exploded Tuesday near a police station in the Iraq city of Fallujah, killing at least four people a day after a series of suicide bombings in Baghdad left about three dozen dead. The Fallujah attack came hours after four American soldiers were wounded in ambushes in northern Iraq. Monday was the bloodiest day in the Iraqi capital since President Bush declared the end of combat 6 months ago. Suicide bombers struck the Red Cross headquarters and three police stations, and the dead included eight Iraqi policemen, at least 26 Iraqi civilians, and a U.S. soldier. Arab media blamed the U.S. failure to provide security in Baghdad for the latest suicide bombings in the Iraqi capital. Most said that Washington had only itself to blame for the chaos, and said the United States had not provided enough security to prevent the attacks that killed 35 people on Monday, the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Independent voters, who some say are key to President Bush's re-election hopes next year, are losing confidence in his leadership in Iraq as attacks there continue, according to a new USA Today CNN Gallup poll. In the poll, 39% of independents approve of the way the Bush administration has handled things in Iraq since Bush declared an end to combat 6 months ago. 57% of independents disapprove. In the public overall, 47% approve. That is a substantial deterioration from late April, when it was assumed that U.S. troops had secured the country. At that time, when 80% of the public approved of the conduct of the war, 73% of independents approved. With flames threatening the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, firefighters got ready Tuesday for another day battling one of the most destructive and deadly wildfire outbreaks in state history. More than 1,100 homes had been destroyed and 15 people killed by five separate blazes scattered around Southern California. More after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509. Or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
Sounds like a fair trade. Blood for beer. United Blood Services of Durango, Colorado held an unusual blood drive this weekend. Donors got a free pint of beer for a pint of blood. Four area breweries took part in the promotion. People from the blood bank got into the spirit of the season by dressing in Halloween costumes, including vampires. There was little more at stake for the brewers than just civic pride. The owner of the brewery that collected the least amount of blood will get a makeover today. Hair dyed blood red. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
The rich get richer the old-fashioned way. They cut insider scratch-my-back deals with each other. Another example of such corruption cropped up in the trial of Frank Quattrone, a former hotshot banker to the high-tech industry. Frank, a banking superstar for Credit Suisse First Boston, has been accused by federal prosecutors of illegally working the system to get his bank to give favorable reviews of the performance of various corporations, thus artificially inflating the value of the corporate stock and deceiving investors. During the trial, the feds produced an email exchange between Frank and Michael Dell, the high-flying honcho of Dell Computers. Frank notified Michael that the stock of a privately held company was about to go public and that a block of the stock could be allocated to him 2 days before the rest of the public knew about the stock offering. Frank wrote to Michael, "My team has gotten word to me that you are personally interested in receiving a meaningful allocation of the stock." This kind of insider scheme virtually guarantees that the Michael Dells of the world make a fat, effortless profit. Sure enough, Michael snapped up shares in the pre-sale at $36 each, and 2 days later, when the stock went public, his shares almost tripled in value. But the emails show that this stock gimme was just an opener by Frank to try to get Michael to throw Dell's banking business to Credit Suisse. The bank was about to hire a stock analyst who would be reporting on Michael's business, and Frank asked if the analyst they had in mind was okay with Dell. No, was the answer. You might be better off with a fresh new talent, Michael wrote to Frank. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the stock market strikes you as a rigged game, these emails show you're right. Back-scratching deals and hand-picked analysts are the way the game is played. And now, the powers that be want you and me to put our Social Security money in the hands of these corrupt players.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals.
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., at the home of the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference, which is put on by the Center for American Progress and several other collaborative groups. It's a fascinating gig here. Wesley Clark is going to be speaking shortly, and I'm wired into the sound system. In fact, you can hear the hall there in the background. Lunch is starting, and as time goes on, he's going to speak, and so we'll play little bits of that if it's of any value. And there's going to be a whole collection of speakers, I believe, and we're going to have some guests from the conference. The New American Strategies for Security and Peace, about the conference, what they said. This is the press stuff that they hand out. Patriotic Americans of all political persuasions are increasingly concerned about the direction of U.S. foreign policy. There's mounting evidence that the present course will weaken rather than strengthen America's own security, reduce rather than increase world stability, and create more hostility toward the United States rather than admiration for our dynamic economy and democratic way of life. And boy, is that, I mean, that is just like nailing down the three big issues. I mean, I guess you would expect a think tank to think things through well, but I mean, that's really it. It's the whole course that this administration has been pursuing, in defiance of some of the best minds within the administration. I mean, so very often we discover after the fact that Colin Powell, for example, was, shall we say, less than enthusiastic about things. But there's just this gung-ho, go get 'em, yes, you know, to heck with what the rest of the world thinks. It is not increasing stability in the world. We are decreasing stability in the world by playing at empire and doing it poorly. And we are not creating a world that loves us or appreciates us. We're creating a world that's hostile towards us. As I've said before, this is so worth repeating to everybody you know, particularly any of these so-called conservatives who listen to right-wing hate radio, is that right after 9/11, on the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th of September, we had the nation, we had the world with us. Then George Bush got up on that pile of rubble and did what he did so well at Andover Prep Academy, where he was the head cheerleader, and said, we are going to get those guys.
And then there were all those editorials. Remember all those editorials? They were in not just in newspapers in the United States, but all around the world. There were editorial voices saying, please be calm. Please, let's take this thing one step at a time. Let's figure out who did it with, you know, thoroughly, carefully, methodically, figure this thing out. And then let's go after them as criminals and bring them to justice. And no, instead they went in with this heavy-fisted military approach that allowed bin Laden and many, if not most, of his senior associates to get away. And he's still gone. I mean, here we are more than 700 days down the road. Where is Osama bin Laden? He's still sending tapes from Pakistan. So anyhow, here at this conference, they say, with this in mind, the American Prospect magazine, the Center for American Progress, and the Century Foundation have sponsored this conference on U.S. national security. The event, New American Strategies for Security and Peace, will provide a forum for the discussion of alternative policies and approaches and stimulate debate on these crucial issues. And the American Prospect, of course, the magazine that was founded way back in 1990. It was launched by Robert Kuttner, who hopefully we will have on as a brief guest in this hour, Robert Reich, who we have had on this program before, and Paul Starr. The Prospect has grown considerably and continues to grow. So that's, and the Century for American Progress, sometimes referred to as John Podesta's think tank. John was the, I think he was the chief of staff in the Clinton administration. One of the big shots in the Clinton administration, and the Center for American Progress is a nonpartisan research and educational institute. The center seeks to find progressive, pragmatic solutions to the greatest democratic and international challenges facing our country, including the economy and budget, tax policy, education, health care, the environment, national defense, homeland security, civil rights, and civil liberties. This is the left's answer. This is not what they would say. But it sure looks to me like this is the left's answer to the Heritage Foundation. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what comes out of this. Already, they're in there regularly with David Sirota, who we had on here yesterday, producing their daily progress report. It's kind of daily update and daily news and information about what's going on in the world and what's happening. You know, summarizing and boiling down the news in ways that are very, very useful. Of course, there are other excellent news sources out there that we all use. You have CommonDreams.org and BuzzFlash.com and Alternet and TomPaine.com and so on. But now we've got Center for American Progress doing what think tanks on the right have been doing for the media, including talk show hosts, for years and years. And so anyhow, just to let you know what that is. The three main areas, foreign policy, domestic policy, and economic policy. And here I am, live. And I encourage you, by the way, when we get some of these guests on, to please call in and let them know that there are actually people listening to this show and, you know, ask some questions and put them on the spot or whatever. I mean, there's plenty of room for people to figure out what's going on here. And particularly in the second and third hour, we're going to have guests in this program from the Center here for American Progress, and I would love to hear from you. But in the meantime, if you'd like to call, that's fine, too. The number's 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-TALK-YES, and Phil in Florida is on the line. Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Phil.
I was listening for a few minutes to Herr Bush's press conference today, live.
You know, I missed that because I was setting up this studio here. What did he say?
He said that they have rehabilitated 1,200 schools in Iraq. Now, U.S. troops haven't been there 1,200 days.
I wonder what rehabilitated means.
Huh?
What does rehabilitated mean? Does that mean that they took out the textbooks that had to do with Saddam and replaced them with something else?
I don't know. He said rehabilitated. The 1,200. Yeah. They haven't been there 1,200 days.
Yeah.
They haven't been there 600 days.
Well, this is not an administration known...
He's just lying out of whole cloth. And the kicker is that no one ever follows up the question when he makes these just out-and-out incredible lies. No one says, well, gee, Mr. President, we've only been there for, you know, X number of days. How could we have been to 1,200 schools when we've only been in the country for, you know, 250 days?
Well, we don't have to do a school a day. I mean, it all depends on what he means by rehabilitated. If rehabilitated means that we've opened the doors,
I'd
that
like
we've
to,
had people sweep into them. Oop, hang on just a second. Let me pot that back down. If it means, you know, going in and tearing Saddam's picture out of all of the books and getting the teachers back to work, my guess is that that's what he's talking about, then, you know, it's just perhaps a poor choice of words from our point of view and an excellent choice of words from his PR spinner's point of view.
But most people, when they think of rehabilitating the school, they don't mean putting a lock and key and opening it up.
Well, my concern is how many schools in America need
rehabilitation. If I told you I rehabilitated your car and all I did is opened up the front door.
Yeah. Well, how many schools in America do you think need to be rehabilitated, Phil?
Oh, God, we got schools that are so old that they were built before parking lots.
Yeah.
San Francisco, that's true. They have no parking lots. They're so old.
Yeah. Yeah, and back in those days, everybody walked. I mean, I used to tell my kids I walked 4 miles to get to junior high school. There, 4 miles there and 4 miles back, uphill both ways. No, it was actually fairly flat because it was in Lansing, Michigan. In the winter, in the snow, in the summer, whatever, and you could just do that back then. I mean, that was in the early 1960s.
Well, in California, about 35% to 40% of elementary students are in trailers.
Wow.
Without and the bathroom is another trailer.
Yeah, and
so
we're
kids,
rehabilitating.
Yeah,
the schools
so kids
in
have to wear a jacket or something, especially when the weather is rainy or windy or whatever, to go to the toilet.
Yeah, well, it's strange times we live in, Phil. It's strange times. It's every problem contains within it the seed of an extraordinary seed of opportunity. And that's not just happy talk. I've seen it so many times in my own life in so many different ways. It's just the key is figuring out where that seed of opportunity is and using it, exploiting it, making it work best. Phil, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in and sharing that with us. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Kodak is on the line. He's driving through California.
Hello.
Is that right?
Yes, I am actually parked.
Oh, okay.
I found it to be a lot better.
Yeah, that's probably a good plan. Where are you, Kodak?
I am I'm north of the fires. I'm over in Barstow, California, headed toward Nevada, actually up to Denver.
Wasn't it just a couple days ago we talked to you and you were in Virginia or something?
Yes, I tend to get around a little bit.
I guess.
Well, I called regarding the previous callers talking about how the president just lied about the they have revisited or refurbished the schools there in Iraq. On the Mike Malloy show last night, he read from a Newsweek article which said that the schools in Iraq are in complete squalor. Feces everywhere. There's no doors on the places. There are no books, no chairs. And in the places that they are, there are, you know, chairs built for 2-3 students to a chair. There are no books anywhere. And like he said, no one called him on these lines.
Yeah, well, the press just doesn't do that anymore. It's the access to the administration has become so valuable because the corporate media in America has abrogated its historic responsibility to report the news and decided instead that they're in the business of conveying entertainment.
Yeah, and another interesting thing regarding the media is how they put the clip together regarding the president's speech. On his show last night, he played some clips from the actual speech where the one that was syndicated, and it was, you could tell where they spliced it together to make his synaptics flow smoothly together. And the part that he said right before the APYR piece was totally
out of time,
incoherent.
Kodak.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, they're doing their best to clean him up. They certainly do it in print a lot. They completely clean up his language. Thanks, Kodak, for the call. I appreciate it. Feel free to call in during the rest of later on in the show or tomorrow when we have guests on too. This is Tom Hartman on IE. We'll be right back.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel relief fast. I mean, the instant Maximum Strength Mylanta liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylanta's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength Mylanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy in the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, man, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
I want everyone to listen up and understand clearly. We need some good weekday programming ideas. I don't know why no one is writing this down.
Oh, geez. Oops.
We need some good weekday programming ideas that will appeal to all angles and opinions of all listeners. Any ideas? Johnson.
Oh, you said the wrong name.
It's Jameson, sir.
Jackson, Johnson, Jasper, whatever.
Maybe we can pick up Limbaugh and convince him to move more to the middle.
That's good. Get out of my office. Yeah, get out. Jeez. You're an idiot.
Durr.
Spicoli.
It's Smith, sir.
Yeah. Give me something good.
Why don't we just have some shows that will appeal to everyone's opinion? It'll make the listener base more diverse and make for a good show.
A talk show that everyone will listen to because their opinions will be supported by other listeners and welcomed by the show host. That's brilliant. Good job, Swanson.
You're on the ball.
Everyone take this next holiday off.
Wait, someone has to work. Doug Steffen's live.
Come on.
The best in progressive talk radio, weekdays, on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Must be the jazz police with Leonard Cohen.
I think it is. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Far right.
I'll give you just a little clip.
In the marketplace of ideas, there's a thumb on the scale, and we are there to challenge that tilt and those ideas.
This
you
from the
can
conference.
More about the prospect by looking at www.prospect.org. And
plug.
I'm delighted to welcome our newest ally in that effort, John Podesta.
Here comes John Podesta, and we'll pot him up for just a moment. Let's just hear the first few words that he says. Rama and Jerry are both on hold. If you guys can just hang on for a minute,
let's just see what this guy has to say. First, let me join Dick and Bob in welcoming you here for what promises to be 2 days of important discussion.
Hopefully his introductory remarks will be brief.
Let me thank in advance all the speakers and panelists who are participating.
But they're not.
And I also want to recognize Strobe Talbot, Jim Steiberg, and the Brookings Institution, and
okay.
John Hamry, Kurt Campbell, and the Center for Strategic
Innovation. The fellow who had just introduced him went through this whole thing about how writers from the days of Barry Goldwater to today were contributing to the American Prospect magazine, this article about how this administration has just squandered America's power around the world, America's high esteem around the planet.
Together by a national security working group under the leadership of Secretary Bill Perry that are included in the conference materials. And I think as you look around the room, you'll also notice that there's some young faces in our audience.
Yeah.
Students.
Okay. Well. Anyhow, let's pick up Rama's call here. We'll come back to John Podesta after the break. Rama, what's up?
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Rama. How's Vermont?
I've seen our good President Bush there on the boob tube there a while ago, and two things that actually caught my attention. One thing he said and one thing that wasn't asked about is, first of all, according to George W. Bush in the White House, is the Taliban are gone. And, he
said that.
Yes, he said the Taliban were gone.
Well, wait a minute. That's not what the news is reporting, the CIA is reporting, Colin Powell is reporting, or anybody else on the planet is reporting. The Taliban is back.
Well,
except for in Kabul.
The president says the Taliban is gone.
Oh, well, you know, it's amazing. Was this an offhand remark? Do you think that this was just like him being dumb, or is this, prepared remarks? Is Karl Rove spinning lies again?
Well, I think first that's a leading question to ask me to put, do I think George Bush is dumb in a question form? I have to answer yes. On the other hand, I don't think this was like a offhand remark, because he said he was making comments that with Saddam Hussein and the Taliban gone, this is a better world. So, you know, he meant to lump them together into one big whole and to imply that, hey, we've won. You know, the war for Iraq's over. The Taliban's gone, and we're actually winning because we've done whatever we did to all those schools.
And they're still on their shtick of trying to tie the Taliban to Saddam, to 9/11, and it's all a war on terror, when there were no terrorists in Iraq, but there was 10% of the planet's oil.
Right. But I think it's becoming a little more transparent. What I thought was really missing, though, was a question, because going back to Bush when he was in Australia last week, talking to the Australian Parliament, and he was getting heckled by a few people, and he issued the words, and this is a quote, "I love free speech." And none of the reporters are bothering to ask him about those anti-free speech zones that they set up to make sure that anybody protesting the president is kept out of sight and out of mind.
Right. I have a feeling those are going to become more and more of an issue as time goes on. I don't think, you know, there are just so many blatant thefts of our liberties, so many overreachings across the Bill of Rights, so, you know, just stomping on the Bill of Rights that this administration is engaged in. You know, there's two American citizens that have been held in prison without their Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial, or Seventh Amendment right to a trial by a jury of their peers, or their Eighth Amendment right to make bail. And It's just mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling what these guys are getting away with. Rama, thanks for the point. Did you have another note here? Do you want to hang out over the break?
Well, real quick, if I had a question for all those smart people you're going to be around, because with the arrest...
Five seconds.
Okay, too late. Bye,
okay,
Tom.
Hang on. We'll pick you up on the other side of the break. Hang on to that line. And then Jerry in North Carolina, hang on. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Fighting wildfires is dangerous work. It can also be surprisingly boring. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. David Callahan has fought wildfires for more than 25 years in Oregon's Applegate Valley. He's gotten a close-up view of one of nature's most unpredictable forces.
Sometimes it's extremely exciting and downright frightening. That's when Mother Nature is really blowing up. She's, you know, moving it along, and that's pretty much the scenes that you see on television. But, you know, sometimes it's really boring.
Callahan says fighting wildfires often requires some pretty mundane work. For example, treating hot spots in areas that have already burned through can be tedious, and firefighters have to lug heavy gear over rugged terrain, usually in summer heat, often shrouded in smoke. But Callahan says the worst part is the waiting. A wildfire operates on its own schedule, sometimes crawling along. For example, during last year's Squires fire in Oregon, Callahan was on a crew waiting for the right moment to do a backburn as the fire crept downhill toward them. A backburn is intentionally set to take out fuel in the path of a fire, and it has to be timed just right. But the fire took hours to travel a few hundred feet down the slope. Callahan says the crew was still waiting at 2 a.m.
In frustration, we went ahead and did our backburn, which wasn't that effective. But it was just creeping along. There was literally nothing to do during this time frame, and that happens a lot. There's a lot of stand-around time sometimes on a fire, depending on what sort of task you're trying to do. Other times, look out. You know, you can't get out of the way fast enough.
It's that unpredictability that makes wildfires so dangerous, and it's one of the reasons Callahan opposes fighting fires that don't threaten communities or homes. He says they're part of nature, and we should stay out of their way. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Tick-tick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk
Australia.
About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Quail.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
Zebra.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Rama, you were on the line just before we broke, and you had further observations on President Bush. What was on your mind there?
Well, actually, no. This one isn't about Bush. It's a question because you're going to be around some really smart people down there. And this has to do with the other day, Putin, the president.
Sarah, one of the folks in the conference, is listening in. I've been telling people about the conference and filling them all in, and all, that's what Rama's talking about when he says down there. Anyhow, yeah, Rama, go ahead.
So Putin... over in Russia, had this guy Khodorkovsky, I believe is his name. He's like one of the richest people in the world, a Russian oil baron.
Right.
He had him arrested for tax evasion charges and all. And apparently, it really hit the Russian stock market really bad. And I'm just kind of
I read about it in today's Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, I I'm just kind of curious as to what people think. I mean, are we already so intertied with what's going on in Russia with their stocks and their stock market, and what kind of effect it could have? And that's it for me. Thank you, Tom.
Okay, you're welcome, Rama. Thanks for the call. I'll poke around here, and I'll ask and see if anybody has any thoughts or opinions on that. My own personal thought is that if an economic crisis in Russia being brought about by a crisis in confidence in the business sector as a result of Putin playing politics with business people brings about Putin following through on his implied threat that he's going to denominate his oil reserves, which are substantial, and his natural gas reserves, which are the largest in the world, in euros instead of dollars, then the United States is in for some real trouble. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Jerry, welcome. To say what? Oh, Stanley. I'm sorry. Stanley in Santa Fe. Yeah, Jerry, you're on cue here. Hang on. Stanley in Santa Fe is on the line. Stanley, what's up?
Hey, first I just want to respond to Phil and Kodak's points, and that is that there's an article, that Newsweek article references some of the issues surrounding the schools, although it covers a great deal more of the economic issues of where's the money going. And one point in the article, it states that Bechtel is proud of the fact that 102 of the 104 USAID contracts it has, it's subcontracted to Iraqis, who then subcontracted and further subcontracted. And what?
Hey, Stanley, which article is this?
That's the Newsweek that was is available on, I believe, today's Truth Out.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And you know, where's the $87 billion or something?
Right.
And then what it points out is that specification would call for an air conditioner in each room, which then to the subcontractor meant an air cooler, which to the subcontractor meant a ceiling fan for $11.
Right, but the original contractor was able to charge thousands because that's what the specification was for. We've talked about that on this program before.
And then it also points out that a U.S.-friendly schoolmaster claims that these are not rehabbed schools and that the schools don't have textbooks, that four children are sharing a two-child desk, the toilets aren't working, and there's refuse, construction refuse everywhere. So that aside, I just came across something interesting that I wanted to share with you that you may already be aware of.
Okay, before we get to that, though, Jerry, did you see the president's press conference this morning?
No, I missed that.
Oh, okay. Okay, carry on.
Sam Dash, the former chief counsel of the Senate Watergate Committee, published an article yesterday in Newsday.com, which is available off of today's BuzzFlash on the left-hand side. His headline is, Spy Leak May Violate Patriot Act.
And what may?
The spy leak, that is the plame issue.
Oh, yeah.
Section 802 of the Act defines, in part, domestic terrorism as, quote, acts dangerous to human life that are a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or of any state, end quote, that appear, quote, to be intended to intimidate or coerce the civilian population. And then he goes on in this article to clearly point out that it's within the provision of the law for them to sneak and peek, to plant bugs on computer keyboards, and do all of these other things, which he says he hopes won't happen, but they're doing it to the Muslim population in America, and they're doing it to American citizens, and so something has to come of this. So it's a very, very interesting observation from a rather well-respected professor at Georgetown and former Watergate counselor.
Yeah, well, you know, as Joe Wilson said, and said so well.
See, I mean, I don't think we're going to let this drop. At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Great.
And time is going to tell. I mean, we are, what, 104 days into the freedom of Karl Rove, and
trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah, and Joe Wilson, a former ambassador, he's a career diplomat. He is not one to just throw language around, you know, randomly and indiscriminately. So,
there's
Stanley,
one more point I'd like to make, if I may.
Okay, sure, go
Actually,
for it.
Actually, there are two. One is that I've been reading, and I've been reading headlines and not articles, but it seems there's an effort underway by the Justice Department to subpoena computers of journalists who may have leaked information regarding the Los Alamos Chinese spy, as he was characterized, that took place here a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so I wonder if that will be a precedent for busting open Robert Novak over this plame affair. If they go,
yeah, well, I think, you know, Novak in the past has decried the outing of CIA agents, and he has also revealed sources. So there's, of course, hypocrisy is nothing new. It's part of not just the conservative condition and not just Novak's condition, but frankly part of the human condition. We find it everywhere, all over the place. But bringing the Patriot Act to bear on this thing, see, this is the message that increasingly Republicans and conservatives are getting. Now that there's blood in the water, as they say in politics, George Bush is wounded, his numbers are dropping. And they were all gung-ho to give all of this power to the executive branch and say, yeah, take over the government, yeah, do that, you know, throw those bums in jail and don't ever let them out. Who cares about the Bill of Rights? And now all of a sudden they're going, wait a minute. If a Democrat gets into power, they could use that stuff against us. Yeah. And now we're hearing, you know, these voices going, wait a minute, maybe we need to think about this twice. And you got Republicans co-sponsoring legislation to tone down the Patriot Act. Surprise, surprise.
Well, that leads me to my final point, and that is that yesterday I was fortunate enough to be free at the time slot following yours, where I encountered, of all people, Marianne Williamson.
Yeah, she's a dear friend and a brilliant person.
I think anything one could say would be an understatement about who she is. And she said one very important thing, that it's not just about, although it's extremely important that we do unseat George Bush, it's about both houses of Congress and the executive branch in order to bring about what you just said, which is let's really look into all of these things and find out what was really happening. And without control, we can't do that.
Yeah, frankly, getting control of both houses, both the House and the Senate, is even more important than who the president is.
Precisely.
And because you know, as we saw during the Clinton administration, as we've seen in many administrations, when the president doesn't control, or his party doesn't control both houses of Congress, then, you know, he can't play, you know, Emperor Rex, Imperious Rex, like George Bush is playing.
Exactly.
And that takes us back to this traditional checks and balances system that the founders had in mind, which we really need. American democracy is at its core an adversarial system, and in a healthy way, not in a punch people up and, you know, knock them down way, but that there needs to be discourse and there needs to be dialogue.
3 to 5 week election cycle and public financing, we might actually have a balanced three-party government.
Yeah, time will tell.
Three-branch government.
Time will tell. Stanley, thanks for the call. I very much appreciate your calling in from Santa Fe. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Mike in Powder Springs, Georgia is on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Not a whole lot. And just to clarify a little point of fact here, yes, there are some Republicans who were for the Patriot Act, but they're conservatives out there have been against it since its inception. And a little bit more background on me, I'm a former policeman, and the Patriot Act does not need to be in place. That's what we have judges for, and that's what we have search warrants for. If you believe you have sufficient evidence to warrant an investigation of someone, you take that evidence and you go and you have their Fourth Amendment rights basically supplanted by getting a search warrant. That's what our Constitution was set up for. So conservatives like me out there have disagreed with the Patriot Act on its face simply because of the intrusion of the Fourth Amendment rights, and that's not necessarily something that's just shown its face now. We've been pretty consistent in our opposition to that with conservatives out there such as Bob Barr. He was interested in it since its inception. And second point of fact, with the war on terrorism and everyone demanding that we pull out of Iraq and basically just quit what we're doing, what would you propose that we do with the spread of militant Islam, which, again, is not the true representation of Islam? It is someone's bastardized interpretation of it. What would you prefer that we do when you look around globally and you look at East Timor, you look at Southeast Asia, you look at Chechnya, you look at Africa, you look at all the Middle East, and you look at 2 confirmed terrorist attacks here in this country? What is the plan that the left has out there to stop this insurgency from coming to our soil once again and killing Americans and other innocent civilians around the planet? All I've heard now is a bunch of rhetoric saying we should get out. That's fine if you're an ostrich, but when you're the leader of the free world and you are the bastion of freedom for the rest of the world, we can't do that, Tom.
I agree. I agree. And if you look at history, Mike,
yes, sir.
What you discover is that Christianity at one point in its infancy, and Judaism, if you want to go, you know, go back and read the book of Joshua sometime.
Correct, the Crusades, exactly.
We're behaving very much in the Christianity in the 10th century with the Crusades. We're behaving very much like Islam is right now.
Are you equating that wrong again with this wrong and then trying to say that Christians now are to blame?
No, don't hallucinate meaning into my words. Let me finish my thought here, and my guess is that you will end up agreeing with me.
All I'm asking is that you don't bring some type of equivalence thing, trying to place blame where it's not. We need to stop this type of threat right now. That's not what I'm hearing from you.
Well, that's because you didn't let me finish.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. What my point is that at one point in its history, Hinduism, Judaism, and Christianity at various points in their history have all been essentially aggressive religions that have proclaimed or sought theocratic governmental institutions and have used violence to promulgate that. And when they have encountered people coming back at them with violence, it has strengthened them. The Crusades immeasurably strengthened the hold of the Catholic Church in Europe. In fact, the reason that Pope declared the Crusades in France originally was because so many people were falling away from the Catholic Church and the feudal forces were starting to split up Europe, and the Pope wanted, the Church wanted to reassert its power. So they said, well, let's have a war. And so they went off to the Middle East, and, you know, you've got the years and years of Crusades, which then morphed into the Inquisition. What transformed Judaism? And what transformed Christianity? And what transformed Hinduism? Although there's still a caste system within Hinduism, it still has some problems. But Hinduism went through a major transformation also about 3,000 years ago. What transformed all three of those religions was that all three of them awakened out of the idea of our way is the only way. Kill anybody who isn't along, you know, on our side. The entire world must become just like us. And into an idea that more closely corresponds, in my opinion, to the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 25, and in the discourse in John 16, 17, 18, 19 at the Last Supper, and Islam. As far as I can tell, most of Islam has not yet gone through that transformation. They haven't gone through that awakening. They haven't had their renaissance. Christianity had its renaissance. Judaism had a renaissance around the first century after the Second Temple was destroyed.
Well, I understand you, Tom, but I'll be frank with you. I'm not in the mood to watch innocent people get killed in lieu of waiting for them to reach their renaissance.
Well, I'm not suggesting that we wait for them. I'm suggesting that we help make it happen.
Well, Tom, the only way that we're going to make that happen is to get rid of the men, not the religious movement, the men who are responsible for this type of Islam spreading. And religion in and of itself is not an evil or a conquesting feature. It is the wants of man who see religion as a tool to basically obtain certain goals. If you look at all major religions, it's basically the same tenet, good over evil. And when you have men who corrupt the religious faith, just like we have Christian right-wing zealots here who are absolutely lunatics, who, if you look at their rhetoric and their teaching, are pretty much on par with the militant Islamists out there. You got to call a spade, no matter where it's at. And it is the men, and I say again, the men behind these movements that we need to stop. It is not the religious in and of itself.
Yeah. See, I don't altogether disagree with you, Mike. But my solution would be a little more complex than that. I don't think that number one, you're going to be very successful by just going out and saying, okay, where are the 23 guys who are in charge of this, and let's assassinate them. Because what's going to happen is there's going to be 230 more standing behind them. Well, and so I think that we need to be infecting Islam with the idea of modernity. And we don't have to do it. There are modern Islamic clerics. The biggest Reformation attempted movement in Islam was the Baha'i religion. If we were to do everything we could to help infiltrate Baha'ism and the other forms of what you might call liberal Islam into the Islamic world, to fund it the way that Saudi Arabia has funded Wahhabism, you would have fewer fewer people out there willing to do suicide attacks. And now, yeah, that's going to take some time. At the same time, of course, you and I agree, if people are trying to kill us, we have to stop them. We have to do whatever's necessary to stop them.
Correct.
But what this administration is missing is that it isn't that there are evil people. It's that there are people who are carrying evil ideas, and those ideas are infectious, and those ideas can be changed.
Well, who is, for example, who are you saying that are harboring these ideas, and how are we not addressing those people?
I think the main group is the Wahhabists, which is this radical Islamic faction that is officially promoted by the government of Saudi Arabia.
Correct. Well, you know what? You have a point there. But one thing I want to point out is, let's look at Iran.
Got about 5 seconds here, Mike.
Okay. Iran, if you look within their culture, they are actually moving toward a more, as you say, liberal type of religion.
Exactly. They're experiencing the beginning of that renewal that I was talking about, and they're doing it because of their exposure to our culture. Good point. Good call, Mike. Thanks for the point. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
You know, you ought to check your credit report.
But I just don't have time.
I have to clean out the garage.
And take the kids to the doctor.
And balance my checkbook.
And take the dog to the vet.
And mow the lawn.
And do the grocery shop. And call the bank.
Stop. If you haven't checked your credit report, there's a fast, easy solution. Log on to freecreditreport.com and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. And get 30 days of our credit check monitoring service free. So don't say,
I'm just too busy.
Log on to freecreditreport.com today.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years
on them. No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Just a few minutes here before we wrap up this segment, this hour. It's 5 minutes, about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. And we have Dan in Fort Worth, Texas on the line. Dan, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. How are you today?
I'm all right, Tom. We've ordered your book on equal protection. I'm blind. My wife reads to us and look forward to reading it.
Thank you.
But I'd have to take some difference with you and your previous caller about the how do we stop the terrorism. Y'all tend to analyze this in terms of Islam versus Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't disagree with you more. I think it's all about imperial aggression. They may.
What's the it that it's all about?
Do what?
What is the it, Dan, that you're referring to that it's all about? You said it's all about imperial
aggression.
Terrorism. What?
Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, terrorism is all about Western imperialist domination. And when, from the time the Europeans were capable of building ships to take them throughout the New World, this has been going on since. And when the Europeans came to this continent, the Indians fought the Europeans not because of their religion versus Christianity, because the imperialists were here to take from them what was theirs. And when the British controlled India and India fought back, India didn't fight back under the galvanized structure of Hinduism versus Christianity. They fought back because the British imperialists came and took from them what was theirs.
Well, although Hinduism played a large role in it, and Gandhi was very, very competent at invoking religious metaphor and
well, sure,
symbols
it,
and
it's
tradition.
It's a galvanizing principle.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Dan. I absolutely don't. We're out of time for this segment. I thank you for the call and appreciate your calling us in from Fort Worth, Texas there. But, yeah, I don't disagree with you. I see this as a convergence of a whole bunch of different variables and factors that are creating a real mess. And that's one of the problems with George Bush's foreign policy perspective is it's so unipolar, it's so black and white, and it's so simplistic. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't
you
have something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Independent voters, who some say are key to President Bush's re-election hopes next year, are losing confidence in his leadership in Iraq as attacks there continue, according to a new USA Today CNN Gallup poll. In the poll, 39% of independents approve of the way the Bush administration has handled things in Iraq since Bush declared an end to combat 6 months ago. 57% of independents disapprove. And the public overall, 47% approve. That is a substantial deterioration from late April, when it was assumed that U.S. troops had secured the country. At that time, when 80% of the public approved of the conduct of the war, 73% of independents approved. A car bomb exploded Tuesday near a police station in the Iraq city of Fallujah, killing at least 4 people a day after a series of suicide bombings in Baghdad left about 36 dead. The Fallujah attack came hours after 4 American soldiers were wounded in ambushes in northern Iraq. Monday was the bloodiest day in the Iraqi capital since President Bush declared the end of combat 6 months ago. Suicide bombers struck the Red Cross headquarters and 3 police stations, and the dead included 8 Iraqi policemen, at least 26 Iraqi civilians, and a U.S. soldier. Arab media blamed the U.S. failure to provide security in Baghdad for the latest suicide bombings in the Iraqi capital. Most said that Washington had only itself to blame for the chaos, and said the United States had not provided enough security to prevent the attacks that killed 35 people on Monday, the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. With flames threatening the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, firefighters got ready Tuesday for another day battling one of the most destructive and deadly wildfire outbreaks in state history. More than 1,100 homes had been destroyed and 15 people killed by 5 separate blazes scattered around Southern California. More after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
An Austrian vandal, apparently bent on revenge, used super glue to seal shut the doors of a public sauna and then fouled the facility's swimming pool with a large amount of motor oil on Monday. The attack happened over the weekend at the sauna in the southern Austrian city of Graz, and investigators said revenge was the probable motive. The sauna's owner had to chisel the glued locks off the door and replace them, as well as completely drain the pool to clean up the oil, which caused an estimated $2,300 in damage. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
The rich get richer the old-fashioned way. They cut insider scratch-my-back deals with each other. Another example of such corruption cropped up in the trial of Frank Quattrone, a former hotshot banker to the high-tech industry. Frank, a banking superstar for Credit Suisse First Boston, has been accused by federal prosecutors of illegally working the system to get his bank to give favorable reviews of the performance of various corporations, thus artificially inflating the value of the corporate stock and deceiving investors. During the trial, the feds produced an email exchange between Frank and Michael Dell, the high-flying honcho of Dell Computers. Frank notified Michael that the stock of a privately held company was about to go public, and that a block of the stock could be allocated to him 2 days before the rest of the public knew about the stock offering. Frank wrote to Michael, "My team has gotten word to me that you are personally interested in receiving a meaningful allocation of the stock." This kind of insider scheme virtually guarantees that the Michael Dells of the world make a fat, effortless profit. Sure enough, Michael snapped up shares in the pre-sale at $36 each, and 2 days later, when the stock went public, his shares almost tripled in value. But the emails show that this stock gimme was just an opener by Frank to try to get Michael to throw Dell's banking business to Credit Suisse. The bank was about to hire a stock analyst who would be reporting on Michael's business, and Frank asked if the analyst they had in mind was okay with Dell. "No," was the answer. "You might be better off with a fresh new talent," Michael wrote to Frank. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the stock market strikes you as a rigged game, these emails show you're right. Back-scratching deals and hand-picked analysts are the way the game is played. And now, the powers that be want you and me to put our Social Security money in the hands of these corrupt players.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, "I don't boogie"?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, also streaming live on the Internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, and live365.com, and streaming down from outer space on the Sirius Satellite Radio System, Stream 145. In this segment, we're very, very honored to have Gail Smith, a former member of the National Security Council staff in the Clinton administration, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Gail has spent most of her career in international affairs in the field. Based in Africa for almost 20 years as a journalist and advisor to NGOs, non-governmental organizations. Gail, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, where in Africa were you? I worked in Uganda for a while, and I spent a fair amount of time in Kenya, but that's pretty much it.
Uh-huh. I also spent quite a bit of time in East Africa, but I was a bit to the east of you in Ethiopia and Eritrea and Sudan.
Ah, tough areas. Some real challenges in those spots.
Real challenges, but there's always room for hope.
Yes, indeed. I'm wondering, you have a good, solid understanding of and background in foreign policy and foreign affairs, and you've seen the United States from outside the United States. You have a sense of how the world views us. What's your sense about, number one, whether there even is a war on terror? And let me frame that question. Mm-hmm. I've been suggesting from the very beginning, I wrote a piece that was in a book called From the Ashes that came out right after 9/11, and I've editorialized about this on commondreams.org for several years now, that
our appropriate response should not have been to declare war, because there wasn't a nation to declare war against. But our appropriate response should have been to say, these people are criminals, and we need to galvanize the world's police forces and go after them. But, okay, we've got this war on terror. Do you think that we are winning it? What's your opinion of it? What are your thoughts on that?
Let me first take your question, the whole phraseology of the war on terrorism, because I think one of the problems there is the use of this word war exclusively.
Yeah.
Why it may well be that force is a necessary component, the fact that it's the only component, I think, has meant that we're not making nearly as much progress as we might have made. And indeed, in some cases, I think we've taken some steps backward because we're focusing, again, exclusively on force at the expense of efforts to enlist the support and engagement of the rest of the world in an effort to, as you say, hunt down, neutralize, and isolate criminals.
Right. Yeah. And it seems that it's interesting. We had a caller just in the last hour, Mike in Georgia, who was saying, okay, you got people out there who want to kill us, and we got to kill them first. I mean, what else can we do? Blah-de, blah-de, blah. And it just seems such a There is such, not to say that Mike is a proponent of a simplistic worldview, he's actually a pretty thoughtful guy, but the administration is putting forward this, you're with us or you're against us, you're good or you're evil, it's just all one thing. What do you see as the essential complexities of the war on terror? What are the real issues here, and how should we be appropriately reacting to this?
Well, I think there are a number of pieces, and I think the simple logic of good and evil, the simple rhetoric that you're either with us or against us, both of those kinds of attitudes betray a lack of understanding, I think, of the fact that this is a very complicated and nuanced struggle that has to do with a number of things. Yes, at one level it has to do with the rise of hostile political Islam, but it also has to do with America's role in the world, the speed with which globalization is proceeding, and how that brings to bear a number of contradictions between and among societies. It has to do with the end of the Cold War and the evolution and expansion of a number of networks where arms are moved, money is supplied, illicit drugs are traded, conflict diamonds and other things your listeners may have heard of are traded, to foster and promote illegal activity. And all these things have come together. Now, I think there's one other piece that's critical. I don't think it's the only necessary piece, but I do think it is central, and that is the situation in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely a need for a resolution of the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and a very clear need for the U.S. to be playing an active role in demonstrating to the world that it actually cares to see a resolution. And I think on that point we failed utterly.
Yeah, and this administration in particular. But I just this one little clip from George Bush. I really think this is how the world sees us, where he says,
"You're with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good."
I mean, it's just that he boils it down to that. What kind of harm is being done to the country?
Well, I think it does tremendous harm, because it says to people, you have no right to your own opinion. You can't agree with us on 4 out of 5 things but disagree on one. You either endorse entirely and utterly our worldview and opinions, or you're on the other side. And the world doesn't work that way, and we shouldn't encourage it to work that way.
Yeah.
I mean, in this country, we all talk about democracy, the need for debate, a broad range of opinion. Why on earth would we want to suggest that in the global community there's only one opinion that's allowed?
We're speaking with Gail Smith, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a former national security staff in the Clinton administration. And if you have a question for Gail, Gail's going to be with us just for a few minutes here. She's going to be leaving us at about 19 minutes after the hour. So if you have a question, you can feel free to call 1-800-TALK-YES and get it in there. Gail, does the U.S. need to fashion a broad, integrated plan to stop the next generation? Well, even the next generation of terrorists implies that there's some kind of a progression going on here.
In fact, that's one of the questions that Don Rumsfeld put on paper in the memo of his that some of your listeners may have heard about that leaked last week.
Yeah.
That's the kind of question that should have been put on the table on September 12th, 2001. It may well be a good thing that it's being asked now, but that's the kind of thing you figure out before you launch a war on terrorism.
Yeah.
And there's no question that we need a multifaceted strategy. if you look at the economic realm, for example, the fact that in one single interconnected world, we've got enormous wealth, as we see in this country, and extreme poverty. I don't know if your listeners follow things like trade, but at the World Trade Summit in Cancun recently, talks absolutely collapsed. And they collapsed over contradictions and tensions between the rich in the world and the poor in the world. We've got to focus on that, as well as all of these other pieces. So an integrated strategy is fundamental.
Yeah. And what components of that integrated strategy?
Well, I think first and foremost is international cooperation, both the kind of cooperation that can forge treaties and rules of the game that can align a coalition of the majority, but at the same time, the kind of international cooperation that can be brought to bear to deal with things like the inequities in the trading system, the scourge of HIV/AIDS and global poverty writ large, and the need to provide for greater access around the world to the kind of opportunities that most of us enjoy in this country. There obviously have to be other pieces. Law enforcement, you referred to early on, there needs to be a strong law enforcement component. But something like that doesn't work. If you want to prevent money from fueling a terrorist operation, but you're not cooperating with other countries, you simply can't do it. So the main fundamental piece is international cooperation.
Yeah.
Without that, we lose.
Yeah, the bully threat just...
The bully threat undermines the effort, number one, and I think it feeds into that perception in many places of the ugly American.
Sure. Well, look at how we responded to King George III when he tried it.
Well, yes. Yes. it's bullying is generally not popular with its recipients.
Right. This is Now, it's been really interesting to me over the last few months in particular, once it became apparent to Americans that George Bush had lied to us to get us into this war. The fallback, the plan B of the organized conservatives, where you literally would hear five different people on five different shows over 4 or 5 days, virtually word for word saying the same thing. The main mantra now seems to be Bill Clinton. Blame everything on Bill Clinton. During the Clinton administration, Clinton knew about the threat of bin Laden. Didn't do anything about bin Laden. Bin Laden blew up this. He blew up that. He killed these folks. He did this thing. And Bill Clinton could have gotten him, and he didn't. You were on the national security staff in the Clinton administration. Talk to me about that. How does one respond to a conservative who says such a thing?
Well, I've certainly had to respond to it on more than one occasion, and I get tired of the when in doubt, blame Bill Clinton. But I think it's an answerable question. Terrorism was very high on the radar screen during the Clinton administration, particularly during the last years. And in fact, the primary focus of briefings for the new National Security Council team by the Clinton team led by Sandy Berger was on terrorism and the strong admonition to the incoming administration that the first priority would necessarily have to be terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about fighting the whole problem of terrorism is a lot of what you do goes unnoticed. There were a lot of things that were done, for example, during what was called Y2K, New Year's, as we entered into the year 2000, when a number of incidents were in fact stopped. There were efforts initiated on money laundering and starting to trace sources of funding and so on and so forth, and specific efforts aimed at bin Laden and the entire Al-Qaeda network. Now, obviously, one can look back and say, wouldn't it have been nice if somebody had taken him out, if you will, years earlier? But I think it's also clear that during the first 9 months of the Bush administration, the priority was national missile defense.
Right.
It was not terrorism.
Yeah.
And the sad fact of the matter was that September 11th was the issue that galvanized the government, both the executive and legislative branches, quite frankly, the media. I worked on the embassy bombings in 1998, if you remember, in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. And one of the things that was very painful for me to notice was that the media covered it for a few days, but nothing like we've seen with September 11th. It disappeared from the radar screen across the board very quickly.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting in the first year of the Bush administration, their emphasis on missile defense, going back to Reagan's thing, and that Donald Rumsfeld had as his employment prior to becoming Secretary of Defense, being a lobbyist for the Strategic Defense Initiative for this missile shield system.
It's extraordinary. I mean, one of the things that was very striking to me, and understand I entered government as somebody who had come from an activist background and worked for non-governmental organizations. It was all new to me. And we got a number of briefings, including on ethics, for example, that if I went to lunch with someone, I was not allowed to accept a meal if it was over $20. Mm. You look at the interconnections between this administration and corporate America, and it's extraordinary what passes for ethical behavior.
Yeah. Well, it's been my perpetual rant that we have entered into an era of neo-feudalism. You know, Mussolini suggested that fascism should rightly be called corporatism. The dictionary definition of it is the merging of state and corporate interests, and it's just horrific to see how many decisions are being made. We've been speaking with Gail Smith, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a former National Security Council staff member in the Clinton administration. Gail, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Today.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been an honor. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back. The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
The rich get richer the old-fashioned way. They cut insider scratch-my-back deals with each other. Another example of such corruption cropped up in the trial of Frank Quattrone, a former hotshot banker to the high-tech industry. Frank, a banking superstar for Credit Suisse First Boston, has been accused by federal prosecutors of illegally working the system to get his bank to give favorable reviews of the performance of various corporations, thus artificially inflating the value of the corporate stock and deceiving investors. During the trial, the feds produced an email exchange between Frank and Michael Dell, the high-flying honcho of Dell Computers. Frank notified Michael that the stock of a privately held company was about to go public, and that a block of the stock could be allocated to him 2 days before the rest of the public knew about the stock offering. Frank wrote to Michael, "My team has gotten word to me that you are personally interested in receiving a meaningful allocation of the stock." This kind of insider scheme virtually guarantees that the Michael Dells of the world make a fat, effortless profit. Sure enough, Michael snapped up shares in the pre-sale at $36 each, and 2 days later, when the stock went public, his shares almost tripled in value. But the emails show that this stock gimme was just an opener by Frank to try to get Michael to throw Dell's banking business to Credit Suisse. The bank was about to hire a stock analyst who would be reporting on Michael's business, and Frank asked if the analyst they had in mind was okay with Dell. No, was the answer. You might be better off with a fresh new talent, Michael wrote to Frank. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the stock market strikes you as a rigged game, these emails show you're right. Back-scratching deals and hand-picked analysts are the way the game is played. And now, the powers that be want you and me to put our Social Security money in the hands of these corrupt players.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And at this moment, Wesley Clark is addressing the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference, sponsored by the Center for American Progress. Let's listen for a few minutes to what he has to say. There's a faint hum in here. My apologies for it, but it's still better than not hearing him at all.
Intelligence, but that rests on trust. And that trust rests on leadership. America needs a leader the world can trust. And we don't have one now. The lack of trust exacts a great cost, and especially when we're dealing with the other serious threats we face. After all, Al-Qaeda is still there. We've got to dismantle it, and the worldwide terrorist networks that are still working and plotting to attack us at home and abroad. We face intractable, or at least very difficult, conflicts in the Middle East and South Asia, and we've got ongoing nuclear challenges in Iran and North Korea. And this administration's reckless actions have depleted the national security asset that, above all, we probably need the most. That's the moral authority we've enjoyed for almost all of our history. The authority to lead other nations, to combine with us, to help us work together. Instead, our alliances are fractured. Well, it's a natural consequence of the contempt this administration has shown for our friends and partners. The Kyoto Protocol, the Biological Weapons Convention, the International Criminal Court, war in Iraq, in so many ways, large and small, we sent a powerful message to the rest of the world. We told other nations, your security, that's your concern, and your concerns are of no concern to us. It's no accident. It's a function of the backward way this administration does business. Traditionally, ideally, we Americans meet our challenges head on. We start with the problem. We start with the facts. We analyze them. We scope out the problem. We reason our way toward alternatives. We compare and contrast the alternatives. We pick a solution. We build support for it, and we lead our citizens and our allies together. This administration, they like to do things in reverse. As we've seen in Iraq, they don't start with the facts and shape a policy. They start with a policy and shape the facts. So what do we do about it? We're going to get at the root of the problem. I've been all across America. I've seen the emotions, the anger, the concern that the American people have today. And they'll all tell you that the root of the problem, it's not America. It's in a very specific location. It's got an address, and that address is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I want to see America once again become a reliable international partner. I'd like to see us be open in our debates and steadfast in our commitments. We want to honor the values we expect from others and exhibit, in the words of our own Declaration of Independence, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind. But to do that, well, we'll need a strategy. We've got to have a strategy today to guide our country into the future and fill the void that emerged at the end of the Cold War with the collapse of the Iron Curtain. We're not looking for some kind of naive idealism, but there is an opportunity today with the challenges we face, an opportunity that comes once in a generation, maybe once in two generations, to bridge the gap between left and right in America, to be strong and to be correct, to be idealistic, to be realistic, to help our security, to promote our values, to bridge that gap and reach a new bipartisan consensus. This Democratic Party has a great tradition in leading the emergence of just such a consensus. We have a heritage of internationalism and strong military power. As Ted Sorensen reminded us, we're the party of Roosevelt and Truman. We're the party that gave birth to the United Nations, NATO, the Truman Doctrine, deterrence, containment, and the Marshall Plan. Going forward, we'll need some new...
And this is General Wesley Clark, live addressing the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference put on by the Center for American Progress and the New Prospect Magazine and a few other groups. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live from the conference here in Washington, D.C. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Fighting wildfires is dangerous work. It can also be surprisingly boring. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. David Callahan has fought wildfires for more than 25 years in Oregon's Applegate Valley. He's gotten a close-up view of one of nature's most unpredictable forces.
Sometimes it's extremely exciting and downright frightening. That's when Mother Nature is really blowing up. She's, you know, moving it along, and that's pretty much the scenes that you see on television. But, you know, sometimes it's really boring.
Callahan says fighting wildfires often requires some pretty mundane work. For example, treating hot spots in areas that have already burned through can be tedious, and firefighters have to lug heavy gear over rugged terrain, usually in summer heat, often shrouded in smoke. But Callahan says the worst part is the waiting. A wildfire operates on its own schedule, sometimes crawling along. For example, during last year's Squires fire in Oregon, Callahan was on a crew waiting for the right moment to do a backburn as the fire crept downhill toward them. A backburn is intentionally set to take out fuel in the path of a fire, and it has to be timed just right. But the fire took hours to travel a few hundred feet down the slope. Callahan says the crew was still waiting at 2 a.m.
In frustration, we went ahead and did our backburn, which wasn't that effective. But it was just creeping along. There was literally nothing to do during this time frame, and that happens a lot. There's a lot of stand-around time sometimes on a fire, depending on what sort of task you're trying to do. Other times, look out. You know, you can't get out of the way fast enough.
It's that unpredictability that makes wildfires so dangerous, and it's one of the reasons Callahan opposes fighting fires that don't threaten communities or homes. He says they're part of nature, and we should stay out of their way. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Help helping you win the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. We listened to about 4 minutes of Wesley Clark there. He's still going on.
The military, moral, political, and financial commitments of 19 nations, including Turkey.
But I'm not going to play much more of it because out of context, it doesn't make much sense. And in context, you got to hear the whole speech. But he's the keynote speaker here for this conference, New American Strategies for Security and Peace, put on by the Center for American Progress, John Podesta's think tank. I believe at the end of the day tomorrow, in our third hour, we're actually going to have John Podesta on as a guest. It's scheduled. You just never know. I mean, this place is full and busy and buzzing. And anyway, the news. News is strange. The news is grim. The news is full of all sorts of odd things. By the way, we may also, in this half hour, it's possible that we're going to have Robert Kuttner come in here and drop in and say hi. I suspect he's going to wait until Wes Clark is done speaking. I know that he wanted to hear the speech. And so if he does, we'll have another interesting conversation. Feel free, please, to call any of these guests who are on if you have questions or even if you want to argue with them. You know, if it's a, well, what are you talking about there? What are you guys doing? U.S. officials in Baghdad. This from today's Wall Street Journal. I flew up here from Vermont on the 6:15 a.m. flight this morning. Got up at 4. And so I read the Wall Street Journal on the plane, and lo and behold, some remarkable stuff in the news. Just some remarkable stuff in the news. The fact that we are selling off Iraq, that we are perceiving Iraq as war loot, as war bounty. I mean, you know, this is something we were very good about not doing after World War II. After World War II, we did not say, well, okay, we've conquered Germany, we've taken back France, but now we're going to take all of their domestic industries and we're going to sell them to American companies at fire sale prices because, of course, there's just been a war. They're destroyed. I mean, can you imagine how the world would have reacted if we did that or how different things would be today? It would have been a mess, frankly. America is not a colonial power. We're not particularly good at it. Frankly, I mean, we've tried it. We tried it with the you know, various fruit companies in Guatemala and Nicaragua, and we tried it in Hawaii, and that ultimately led to statehood for Hawaii. Many would say over the strong objections of the Hawaiians. We've tried our imperialism. The Philippines, for 40, 50 years, we were staked out there. The bizarre irony of George Bush going there and telling them what a great model they are for how a country should respond to American occupation. But we've never, you know, what the British Empire turned into an art form back in the 16th and 17th and 18th centuries. And the Belgians got into the act in Africa and the Dutch and the French and, you know, all these, the Spanish and the Portuguese, all these European powers who were just openly imperialistic, openly saying, going into nations and saying, you know, we're here to rob you guys blind. We beat you in a war. We beat you in a battle. And now what you got, what you own is ours. We're going to take it. I mean, when Pizarro, he garroted, he killed the king, Huayna, the king of the Incas, in, what was that, 1536, as I recall? It's been a while. I don't have the stuff in front of me. But, you know, this was about 30 years, 35, 1492, maybe 40 years after Columbus. And he killed the king of the Incas because they brought him, he kidnapped him. And then he said, bring me a room full of gold and a room full of silver as ransom, and I'll give you back your king. And so they did. So he said, whoa, if they got that much, they must have a whole lot more. And so he killed the king. and marched with, you know, 200, my recollection is it was 239 soldiers. I mean, it wasn't very many. Marched into the Incan capital and seized it. Now, what allowed him to do that was the fact that about 15 years earlier, smallpox had started traveling south from Mexico and jumped just jumped into that region south from Florida and the southern parts of North America. And perhaps as many as 90%, probably at least as many as 70% of all the Incans were dead. They were dead and dying from smallpox. Only a very small percentage survived. So anyhow, he conquered the country, and the king of Spain sent over a tax representative. I mean, there were so many hundreds or perhaps thousands of tons of gold in the form of priceless artifacts. I mean, artifacts that went back thousands of years. Incredible things that you can hardly imagine them, because, you know, from time to time now we find them in archaeological digs buried in graves. But what Spain did was they divided up the Inca lands as mining stakes. And miners, 20,000 or more miners, went over there from Spain, and they just dug in the ground into these old burial grounds and dug out the corpses and found all the gold decorations and all the gold pieces. The head god of the Aztecs was the god of the sun. I forget his name. It's something like Enlil, although that was one of the gods of the Mesopotamians. But as a result of that, there were golden suns everywhere, and there were entire buildings faced with gold in the Incan capital. And after the easily grabbed gold was taken, then they parceled up these mining stakes, and they started digging in, and they built these big smelting operations, because the king, you know, the idea of things having archaeological value hadn't occurred to the Spanish, but they knew gold had value. So they melted it all down into bullion, and the king had his official representative there to take his 20% tax, and then you could ship it back to Spain. And this fueled this incredible boom in Spain and much of the rest of Europe, and sent everybody on a frenzy to find what could be found in the Americas. And, well, you know the rest of the story there. But anyhow, when you look at how imperial countries, imperial states, have historically dealt with this sort of thing, how they have... stolen, how we have pillaged other nations. The behavior of the United States in Iraq is now beginning to be suspect. Because while after World War II we didn't say, okay, Hitler, we beat you, and so we're going to let Ford buy Volkswagen, and we're going to let General Motors buy BMW, the Bavarian Motor Works, for pennies on the dollar, because the factories are destroyed and the workforce isn't even around anymore, and we're just going to sell off all of your assets to our local company. We didn't do that. Instead, we said, you know, good luck, rebuild your economy. We're going to help you, in fact, but we're not going to take any of it. But now in Iraq, we've got this situation which a lot of people agree is actually illegal. We have this situation where we are going in and we're selling off the state-owned businesses of Iraq, mostly to American companies. So here in today's Wall Street Journal, "Selling Iraqis on Selling Iraq" is the headline, an article by Neil King Jr. U.S. officials in Baghdad hope that by December they will have completed a plan to sell off at least half of Iraq's state-owned companies. But many Iraqis, including members of the nation's U.S. anointed governing council, are saying, not so fast. And they talk about how this is causing deeper unrest. I mean, this could be a real problem for this administration. For our efforts in Iraq, shall we say. The article goes on to point out, economic experts within the administration began to weigh privatization plans and investment rules for Iraq as early as last December. Now, this was before we had even said we were going to go into Iraq. They were already figuring out how they were going to divide it up, what they were going to sell, to whom they were going to sell it. I mean, this was in advance even of the invasion itself. We were deciding to sell off Iraq. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. So a great article in the Wall Street Journal. I'll get into that in a little more detail in a few minutes and share the information with you on that. However, we've got about 11, 12 minutes here left in this segment, and we are very fortunate to have Robert Kuttner, the co-founder, co-editor, and president of the American Prospect, who has spent his entire career writing about the interplay between the marketplace and democratic society. He's been a teacher and author as well as an editor and syndicated columnist. Kuttner is the author of 6 books, most notably Everything for Sale, The Virtues and Limits of Markets, which I have at home.
Well, it's for sale.
It is. There you go. Which demonstrates that social investments are necessary to make markets work efficiently. He previously worked on the staffs of the New Republic, the Washington Post, the U.S. Senate Banking Committee, and is co-founder of the Economic Policy Institute, and a winner of the United Nations Paul Hoffman Award for his lifetime of work on markets and social justice. Bob, welcome to the program. I'm so pleased you could make it. What do you see first of all, you just heard Wesley Clark's speech. We broadcast about 5 minutes of it between two commercial breaks, and I thought that there were some good points. What in your opinion are the things that he's saying that really need to be said that aren't just like Me Too-isms of all the other Democratic candidates? And where are the areas where you wish he would go farther?
I think if Wesley Clark, and I'm going to be very candid here, I feel vindicated because I wrote this about 6 weeks before he got into it. If he can learn how to do politics, he can blow George W. Bush away in a fashion that I don't think anybody else in the field can. And the disconcerting thing is that his campaign organization has yet to get up to speed, and you would think that someone who's a 4-star general who's putting himself forward as someone who knows something about leadership, could whip his campaign staff into shape. I think he's got about a month to do that. We heard today that he can give one hell of a speech, that he's got so much credibility as a leader who understands the military that the George Bush jumpsuit moment instantly becomes even more risible than Mike Dukakis looking like Rocky the Flying Squirrel.
Right.
That poster of Bush on the deck playing soldier is going to become an object of ridicule. Yeah. So, and I think with the near implosion of the Kerry campaign, for reasons that are kind of complicated, but I think Kerry is very rapidly sinking, this is the guy who's got the credibility on national security who can really out-Bush Bush and then some without ceasing to be a pretty good progressive. And I think he is a pretty good progressive. I think the other speech that I'd like to hear Wes Clark give, which he could give because he said this in bits and pieces, although he has not fused it into a single speech, is something like this. I spent my career in the military. In the military, everybody has health insurance. In the military, all families have high-quality child care. In the military, your pensions are guaranteed, and Enron can't steal them. In the military, we train you. We care about your career, and if we have no use for the horse cavalry, we don't just throw you on the scrap heap. We find something else useful for you to do. In the military, we make affirmative action work. In the military, the top guy earns 12 times what the bottom guy does and not 1,200 times,
right,
as in the private sector, and it doesn't have any negative effect on incentive. I think if Clark were to do that, he would reintroduce the idea of social investment as something patriotic, and he would reintroduce himself as someone who has thought as seriously about domestic affairs as he has about military affairs. Now, I'm not endorsing anybody, but I think he'd be a hell of a candidate if he can put the pieces together. That was a terrifically powerful, effective speech. And he's got the credibility to take on Bush and whittle Bush down to size as a toy soldier in a way that few other candidates do. Now, Dean has done something absolutely formidable. I mean, he's used the Internet, and it doesn't have anything to do with the Internet per se. It has to do with the fact that he's been a leader.
Yeah.
The Internet has simply become the enabling technology in a way that allows small money to give big money a run for its money, as it were. My intuition is that this boils down to Clark versus Dean, which will be very, very, very interesting. I think it's too reductionist to simply see Wesley Clark as the vehicle of the Clintonistas or the vehicle of the party establishment to want to stop Dean. He's his own guy. I think people in politics make the mistake of viewing everybody as somebody else's guy, and that's not how it works for the most part. My guess is that Gephardt will hang in for a while, and if it turns out that Wesley Clark can't do politics, then I think a lot of the institutional party support that resents Dean as an outsider will default to Gephardt. Well, that makes for a very interesting race. I mean, would that we could combine them into one candidate, you know, the on-the-ground volunteer excitement of Dean.
There's the president-vice president thing. I mean.
Yeah, and then the question is, since these are both two pretty proud guys, who's the president and who's the vice president? Yeah. But I think both of them are bringing something terribly, terribly important to this campaign that the other can't duplicate. And I think Bush is incredibly vulnerable, and I think public opinion is at a tipping point, both on the war and on the economy, and what we need is a horse.
Yeah. We're speaking with Robert Kuttner, co-founder, co-editor, and president of the American Prospect. Robert, we've got about 30 seconds, maybe 20 seconds here before this segment wraps up. What do you think is the single largest issue facing the Democrats right now? And then we can talk about it for a few minutes right after the break.
Well, I think two single largest issues. I think they have to show up Bush on the economy, and they have to show up Bush as having made the country more dangerous, the world more dangerous, having given us a delusional, deceptive foreign policy.
Yeah, yeah. One that is not only making the world more dangerous, but is making us increasingly the perceived villain.
Yeah,
of the world.
Exactly.
This is incredible, incredible change. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bear Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bear Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bear Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire grilled chicken, fire roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on a fresh baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over, the fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things
and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Apparently, Simple Scotty missed the memo from Bush stating that everybody had to stop trying to link Saddam to 9-1-1.
The most dangerous threat we face in a post-September 11th world is the nexus between outlaw regimes with weapons of mass destruction and terrorists. Saddam Hussein had a history of weapons of mass destruction.
Maybe before you were born, you little jackass! Did Scotty not get the memo? There is no connection between 9/11 and Saddam. It came out of the Bush bastard's own mouth. It's come out of all their mouths. Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, all of them. Scotty, hello.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con and conservative, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We were speaking with Robert Kuttner. This, as conferences go, as you know, things there's people to meet, folks to schmooze, things to hear, stuff to do, and Robert had to boogie on out. I'm very grateful that he was able to spend the time he did with us. But we have Steph. Who is that on the line? Jim. Jim in Texas is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, sir.
Hey, Jim.
I just wanted to ask your guest. I think the biggest thing that I have on my mind right at the moment are these the fairness of elections. And your next guest, if you get a chance to ask them, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to get their heads together and figure out how they're going to keep these Republicans from stealing the next election? And,
yeah.
You know, this is a very big concern of mine. I think about this constantly, how they're getting ready to rip us off again. And
Jim, have you contacted your elected representatives about Rush Holt's bill?
I have.
Good.
On the state level and my local level.
Damn.
And, they give me the same song and dance that they're aware of the problem and they're working on it. So, but anyway, maybe ask your next guest that question and see what they're going to put their heads together and see what they're going to do about it.
Well, I'm guessing we're going to have several guests on the program today and tomorrow from the conference here, this new liberal think tank. The next guest actually is a woman who wrote in Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill, and which is a little off topic of elections, but I will bring
sure.
that up whenever possible, Jim. I assure
sure.
you, and I do. In fact, have you seen the news reports now that it looks like the voting machines did their thing in 2000 in Florida, that the voting machines may have given several thousand, maybe as many as 10,000 extra votes to George W. Bush in Florida?
Well, I haven't seen that, but I'll look for that. I haven't. That got by me. I try to keep up on this stuff, but, there's so much that happens with this administration. I mean, it's an everyday process. And
oh, you need a database to keep track of the scandals.
It's incredible. I can't get over the ruse of this administration. It's just an amazing
thing.
I agree.
It's nuts, Jim. Jim, thank you for the call. I got to go. It's the end of the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, protecting you from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Man.
ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A car bomb exploded Tuesday near a police station in the Iraq city of Fallujah, killing at least four people a day after a series of suicide bombings in Baghdad left about three dozen dead. The Fallujah attack came hours after four American soldiers were wounded in ambushes in northern Iraq. Monday was the bloodiest day in the Iraqi capital since President Bush declared the end of combat 6 months ago. Suicide bombers struck the Red Cross headquarters and three police stations, and the dead included eight Iraqi policemen, at least 26 Iraqi civilians, and a U.S. soldier. Arab media blamed the U.S. failure to provide security in Baghdad for the latest suicide bombings in the Iraqi capital. Most said that Washington had only itself to blame for the chaos, and said the United States had not provided enough security to prevent the attacks that killed 35 people on Monday, the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Independent voters, who some say are key to President Bush's re-election hopes next year, are losing confidence in his leadership in Iraq as attacks there continue, according to a new USA Today CNN Gallup poll. In the poll, 39% of independents approve of the way the Bush administration has handled things in Iraq since Bush declared an end to combat 6 months ago. 57% of independents disapprove. In the public overall, 47% approve. That is a substantial deterioration from late April, when it was assumed that U.S. troops had secured the country. At that time, when 80% of the public approved of the conduct of the war, 73% of independents approved. With flames threatening the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, firefighters got ready Tuesday for another day battling one of the most destructive and deadly wildfire outbreaks in state history. More than 1,100 homes had been destroyed and 15 people killed by five separate blazes scattered around Southern California. More after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509. Or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
Sounds like a fair trade. Blood for beer. United Blood Services of Durango, Colorado held an unusual blood drive this weekend. Donors got a free pint of beer for a pint of blood. Four area breweries took part in the promotion. People from the blood bank got into the spirit of the season by dressing in Halloween costumes, including vampires. There was little more at stake for the brewers than just civic pride. The owner of the brewery that collected the least amount of blood will get a makeover today. Hair dyed blood red. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
The rich get richer the old-fashioned way. They cut insider scratch-my-back deals with each other. Another example of such corruption cropped up in the trial of Frank Quattrone, a former hotshot banker to the high-tech industry. Frank, a banking superstar for Credit Suisse First Boston, has been accused by federal prosecutors of illegally working the system to get his bank to give favorable reviews of the performance of various corporations, thus artificially inflating the value of the corporate stock and deceiving investors. During the trial, the feds produced an email exchange between Frank and Michael Dell, the high-flying honcho of Dell Computers. Frank notified Michael that the stock of a privately held company was about to go public and that a block of the stock could be allocated to him 2 days before the rest of the public knew about the stock offering. Frank wrote to Michael, "My team has gotten word to me that you are personally interested in receiving a meaningful allocation of the stock." This kind of insider scheme virtually guarantees that the Michael Dells of the world make a fat, effortless profit. Sure enough, Michael snapped up shares in the pre-sale at $36 each, and 2 days later, when the stock went public, his shares almost tripled in value. But the emails show that this stock gimme was just an opener by Frank to try to get Michael to throw Dell's banking business to Credit Suisse. The bank was about to hire a stock analyst who would be reporting on Michael's business, and Frank asked if the analyst they had in mind was okay with Dell. "No," was the answer. "You might be better off with a fresh new talent," Michael wrote to Frank. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the stock market strikes you as a rigged game, these emails show you're right. Back-scratching deals and hand-picked analysts are the way the game is played. And now, the powers that be want you and me to put our Social Security money in the hands of these corrupt players.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. We're broadcasting live from the conference, the New American Strategies for Security and Peace, put on in part by the Center for American Progress here in Washington, D.C. And an interesting show, an interesting collection of folks here. It's really, really quite fascinating. You've heard bits and pieces in some of our guests. And I'm very pleased to have our next guest, Jessica Stern, on. Jessica is an author. She's also the foremost U.S. expert on terrorism. That's quite a the foremost U.S. expert on terrorism. That's your publicist wrote that, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. But I'm willing to believe it. Is a lecturer on public policy at Harvard University and a faculty affiliate of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs. From 1994 to 1995, she served as director for Russian, Ukrainian, and Eurasian Affairs of the National Security Council. From 1995 to 96, she was a national fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. And from 1998 to 1999, she was a super terrorism fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Jessica, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm really pleased that you could make it here. You wrote an extraordinary book called Terror in the Name of God, subtitled Why Religious Militants Kill. And you drew parallels in that book between Tim McVeigh and the Ayatollah and the whole spectrum. Well, let's just boil it down to a really simple question. Why do religious militants kill?
Well, I included terrorism in three religious traditions in part to point out some of the similarities. Let me start first with the differences, which
sure.
I think are important to get on the table. At this point in history, it's only Islamist extremists who are able to attract large pools of humiliated young men to form their terrorist armies. And the Jewish and Christian groups that I've looked at are actually, I would say, pretty much flops as terrorists in comparison with their Islamist counterparts. But there are some similarities, and I think it's very interesting to look at them. One is the extent to which terrorist leaders are able to capitalize on alienation and humiliation and in some cases, poverty, hopelessness, in order to turn what are often ordinary young men into terrorist killers. There's a whole organizational approach that's employed. It's a technique of almost turning a person, as Robert J. Lifton would put it, into a double person, one who is perhaps able to walk the old lady across the street and has a grievance that we all can identify with, and yet the other side we can't really identify with, the person who's willing to go over the moral edge deliberately to target innocent non-combatants purportedly in the name of God.
So this is brainwashing, for lack of a better word. This is, I mean, also in Sri Lanka, aren't there, and in parts of northern India, aren't there Hindu terrorists as well?
Yes, there certainly are. Some of the Hindu terrorists in India would fall into my definition of religious terrorists in the sense that they claim that they're killing, in essence, in the name of God, whereas the conflict in Sri Lanka is not really defined in religious terms.
Yeah, it's more nationalism.
I limited the number of religions. I actually have talked to Hindu extremists quite a bit, and it's worth pointing out that they're also Buddhist terrorists. There's no religion that's immune to being misapplied and abused.
What I thought was extraordinary was that you actually spent, 5 years out there talking with these folks, hanging out with them, getting inside their heads. This is remarkable. We have Tom, speak up. Sorry there, Steph. Okay. We have David in San Francisco on the line. David had a question for Jessica Stern. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I was interested in specifics about what I call the fear industry, the whole idea that the churches and various PR agencies do various things to keep the decision-making going toward having a war, or the resolution, I guess, that people become resigned to the idea that they are doomed to such a thing. And in fact, frankly, looking at these apocalyptic Christians, I don't know if you're going to be able to get into the origins of that and whatnot, but the idea that people would actually encourage the apocalypse so that Jesus would get here quicker and clean it up.
Kind of like Ronald Reagan when he was sitting with the, I believe it was the Israeli ambassador over dinner, and he said, you know, I expect, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, it's in one of my books. He said, you know, I expect in my own lifetime to see the Battle of Armageddon and the end of the world, and the description sounds like a nuclear war to me, and you know, there's no shortage of folks within this administration who seem to be all in favor of the Left Behind books. I mean, the incredible popularity, the whole, yes, okay. So, what are your thoughts on that, Jessica? What do you see in this fundamentalist Christianity and the idea of not just personal terrorism, but world-ending, God-inspired terrorism? God is a terrorist.
Well, identity Christian cults are very interested in the apocalypse, the end of times.
Yeah. And you visited one in Texas, wasn't it?
Yes, I did. Yes.
You know, one of the Christian identity groups.
You know, it's one thing to be talking on the radio about the notion that people actually believe that they can kill people and persuade the Messiah to return more quickly. But I can tell you it's another thing entirely to sit down over dinner with someone who I spoke with someone who by that time was regretting his involvement in a group that was actively trying to bring about the apocalypse and feeling that they needed to be armed in order to fight it out at that point. But to actually be with someone who had these views is very, it's dizzying almost. But I think this idea about a fear industry is quite interesting. It's interesting to observe that Americans are simultaneously extraordinarily religious. We're a real outlier in terms of if you look across the world at industrialization, you can see a general trend that the more industrialized or post-industrialized a country is in general, the less religious its population. But America is an outlier. We're much more religious than we ought to be.
Why do you think that is?
I don't really have the answer to that, but I think it is somehow correlated with another observation, which is that we're also very fearful. There's a new study still in the works by a colleague of mine, Pippa Norris, who is also at Kennedy School. She believes that religiosity is determined not by level of development, but by, in the normal sense, but by level of human security, human development indicators, which include not at all just GDP per capita, but also level of differences in the population, healthcare, etc.
Yeah, interesting. Just general security. So,
right.
But I interrupted you. You were going down a train of logic, or had you finished that?
Well, I'm just suggesting that I don't know the answer, but it is interesting that there is that we are both extremely risk averse and fearful, and we're also more religious than one would expect based on the usual correlation between industrialization and lack of religiosity.
Well, I think it's part of the human condition. I suspect it's not. Maybe it is, but I suspect it's not cultural conditioning or religious upbringing that causes people in moments of true terror to call out to God. You know, somebody on an airplane that they think is going to crash, they start praying. People who have never prayed before, whatever. I mean, you know, what the old saying from World War I that, you know, there are no atheists in the foxholes and that kind of thing. So it may be that this administration has been so successful in taking a terrorist crime, and turning it into an icon for our society and saturating us in it and having these continuous alert, terror alert for the day. Now it's yellow. Now it's orange. Oh, is it going to go to red? You know, duck, you know. And that people, you know, are people turning to religion? Because I'm not really sure. Anyhow, we got a couple of calls here. Armin in Florida and Terry in Petaluma, California. Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. You're on the line with Tom Hartman and Jessica Stern.
Thank you very much. Jessica?
Yes?
I have a question. What do you think about God telling W to attack Afghanistan and Iraq? Actually, Iraq, only after the Taliban and Saddam told him to kiss off.
Interesting question, Armin. Thanks. I appreciate your call. Do you know the context of this, Jessica?
No, I don't.
Okay. George W. Bush, this was in the newspaper. When he met with the Abbas, the prime minister of the then prime minister of Palestine, and with Sharon, Abbas, in a speech the next day, a public speech, which was reported in the New York Times and other publications, said that Bush had told him, and Bush never denied this after this came out, that God had personally told George W. Bush in prayer that he should strike at Saddam Hussein, at Osama bin Laden, and that he therefore ordered the strike in Afghanistan.
And, you know, many people think that when somebody says that the voice of God, that they literally hear the voice of God in their head telling them to kill somebody, and they kill that person, that they should be institutionalized. And I guess that was Armin's question. What do you think about the, you know, this, not do you think George W. should be institutionalized, but just this whole use of religion and religious metaphor by this administration to advance their political causes?
Well, I have to say that in some ways I'm envious of people whose faith is so strong that they believe they have a direct telephone link to God. But at the same time, I've met quite a few of them, and I am amazed how many times the God that seems to be on the end of their telephone lines promotes violence and hatred. Yeah. And one does begin to wonder, given that that is not really the typical image of God.
Yeah, what kind of God could that be? We've got about a minute left here. Terry in Petaluma, California has a question. Actually, we've got about 15 seconds left. Terry, is it a quickie?
Hello, Jessica. I just wanted to know if you've heard of this attorney named Hilton who's representing some of the family survivors of 9-1-1, and some of the claims he's made were that there's still some of the hijackers were alive, that one of them was married, that the FBI was paying...
Do you know anything about this, Jessica?
I know about the lawsuit, but I don't know about those details.
Yeah, it's kind of far-out stuff, I think. Thank you. Thank you, Terry. I appreciate the call. Thank you, Jessica, for being with us on the program today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Another
audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Dude. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman protecting America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We're talking with Jessica Stern, author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. And Jessica, in the 4 minutes or so here that we have left, there's two questions I have for you. One is you talk about the God-shaped hole in our culture, and I wonder what you mean by that, or I'd like you to share with our listeners your conception of that. And also, your thoughts on our invasion of Iraq and what impact or what the consequences of that have been in terms of world opinion, in terms of how it is actually shaping the religions of the world in a reactive way.
Well, I think I'll take the second question first.
Okay.
The first is much harder.
Yeah.
I think that it's clear that as soon as the war in Iraq became imminent, that the Al-Qaeda movement was using that war to recruit. We know from intelligence reports that have been published in the New York Times and the Straits Times in Singapore that intelligence agencies were finding that Iraq was being used as a rallying cry and that a new kind of recruits were being brought in, younger people, more converts, people, quote, reportedly with a more menacing attitude, and also, interestingly, women in logistics roles. And I think what has happened is Iraq, unfortunately, has become a kind of mecca for a wide variety of terrorist groups, not even necessarily affiliated with the Al-Qaeda movement. For example, I've been hearing for many months about the presence of Hezbollah in Iraq. It's quite a surprise to see that Hezbollah would be in Iraq and that it would be, in essence, fighting a common enemy with Al-Qaeda and related groups, which are Sunni. Hezbollah, of course, is Shia. And we also know that Iraqis, before the war, had very, very little sympathy for Sunni extremist groups, including Al-Qaeda.
Well, in fact, they aggressively suppressed them.
Right. But there was actually a poll taken very soon after the war was completed, and there was still a very strong opposition to on the part of the people, not the government, on the part of the people to the Islamist agenda. And this is clearly changing, according to people that I've talked to who have been spending time with Iraqi extremists who are aware of what's going on. There's a shift in the view, and we also know a Pew Foundation poll taken in June of this year showed that the level of antipathy to the United States in the Islamic world had just grown dramatically, indeed, that in some Muslim-majority countries there was more confidence in bin Laden as a world leader than in President Bush. And this is really a problem. To me, this shows exactly why we should not have gone to war unprovoked with no support from the international community. the image of Baghdad occupied by U.S. troops and tanks is deeply humiliating to Muslims, and I think it really is a gift to bin Laden. Now, as for the God-shaped hole in human consciousness, I think that there is a sort of angst, and that we all feel a bit confused about identity. It used to be that we lived in smaller communities, and now with globalization, we can find communities virtually and travel so much and can kind of choose our identities. And it doesn't just come from the small group that we associate with. And this has created discomfort and a desire for identity that leads to extremism.
Remarkable. Jessica Stern, the author of Terror in the Name of God, an extraordinary book. I recommend you go out and buy it tomorrow, or maybe even today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Fighting wildfires is dangerous work. It can also be surprisingly boring. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. David Callahan has fought wildfires for more than 25 years in Oregon's Applegate Valley. He's gotten a close-up view of one of nature's most unpredictable forces.
Sometimes it's extremely exciting and downright frightening. That's when Mother Nature is really blowing up. She's, you know, moving it along, and that's pretty much the scenes that you see on television. But, you know, sometimes it's really boring.
Callahan says fighting wildfires often requires some pretty mundane work. For example, treating hot spots in areas that have already burned through can be tedious, and firefighters have to lug heavy gear over rugged terrain, usually in summer heat, often shrouded in smoke. But Callahan says the worst part is the waiting. A wildfire operates on its own schedule, sometimes crawling along. For example, during last year's Squires fire in Oregon, Callahan was on a crew waiting for the right moment to do a backburn as the fire crept downhill toward them. A backburn is intentionally set to take out fuel in the path of a fire, and it has to be timed just right. But the fire took hours to travel a few hundred feet down the slope. Callahan says the crew was still waiting at 2 a.m.
In frustration, we went ahead and did our backburn, which wasn't that effective. But it was just creeping along. There was literally nothing to do during this time frame, and that happens a lot. There's a lot of stand-around time sometimes on a fire, depending on what sort of task you're trying to do. Other times, look out. You know, you can't get out of the way fast enough.
It's that unpredictability that makes wildfires so dangerous, and it's one of the reasons Callahan opposes fighting fires that don't threaten communities or homes. He says they're part of nature, and we should stay out of their way. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War.
Yeah, well, he's going to Graceland. I'm here in Washington, D.C. at the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference, broadcasting live, co-sponsored by the Center for American Progress. Fascinating group here. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. I'm wondering, you know, to what extent corporations are going to get their greedy claws into this kind of stuff, or whether there's going to be some relative purity to it. Time will tell, but so far it looks very promising. I'm very pleased with the kind of work these folks have been doing. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you have comments in our final half hour here. I've got some more information for you on selling Iraqis on selling Iraq. I wanted to wrap that up. The House Senate negotiators have set a pact on $20 billion to sell the environment down the tubes. So much news. Republicans are supplying an economic trap for the Democrats, according to today's Wall Street Journal. I thought that was a very thought-provoking column by Alan Murray. If we have time, I'll get into that. And in the meantime, we've got Greg in Montana on the line. Where in Montana are you located, Greg?
I'm just outside of Bozeman.
Oh, beautiful country there.
Yeah, it is nice. It's getting ready to be winter here any time, probably tomorrow.
Yeah, have you had snow yet?
We've had just a touch of snow, but we're supposed to get 2 or 3 inches tomorrow, I guess. So.
Yeah, it's about the same with us up in Vermont. It just warmed up just a little bit, but we had snow last week. Anyhow, that's not what you called to talk about.
No.
What's up?
Well, I wanted to just a couple of comments and maybe a question for Jessica.
Jessica has left.
Oh, she has. Okay. Well,
yeah, our guests here tend to come in and do their thing, and then they've got there's so much going on. People are on panels and all that kind of stuff, so it's hard to keep them very long.
Well, what I'm concerned about is, you know, one of the things that she said was that Iraqis or people in that region are insulted or somehow discomforted by the fact that we're there in Baghdad, our troops there in Baghdad. And I can understand that without a doubt. You know, they see this as a breach of their sovereignty and whatnot. The problem I've got with that is that's just, I think, just another excuse for them to not like us. And if it wasn't that, it would be something else. And we have to put up with this daily barrage of anti-Western rhetoric coming from the Middle East, whether we're there or not. And then any time that someone here utters something that is vaguely religious in nature or attaches religion to it in some context, then that's somehow way over the top. And so I guess I don't know what the answer is to sort of fight their belief that, you know, all infidels should be killed.
Well, there were times when Americans were very welcome in the Middle East. I mean, I spent time in Egypt back 20 years ago, and the Egyptians were embracing Americans, loving Americans. Saudi Arabia in the 50s and 60s, yeah, you could say, okay, we put in the House of Saud a bunch of despots, but they created a standard of living that the Saudis were very, very happy with, and it wasn't until the Wahhabists really got their fingers into things that things really started to change. My guess, Greg, is that it's not that there's them and they hate us and here's us and we're just good guys. My guess is that they have some actual legitimate grievances, what they perceive to be legitimate grievances, and probably the top one is that the United Nations mandated that the Palestinians would have their own state back in the 1940s, and it still hasn't happened. And that's like a, you know, it's like a sore that doesn't heal. It's a wound that just keeps festering.
I agree with you very much on that point, and wish the Palestinians would have their own homeland. Let me ask you this, in your honest opinion, if either one of us could just wave a wand today and the Palestinians would have their own homeland without any kind of Israeli interference at all, everything would just be peaches and cream, Do you think that would stop a large faction, I won't say the majority, but a large faction of Palestinians still hoping for the eradication of Israel?
Yeah, actually, I think it would. Yeah. What you find, one of the reasons I think why in Europe fundamentalist Christianity is almost non-existent. When we lived in Germany, when we enrolled all of our kids, we enrolled them in the local public schools because we lived in this little town out in the middle of West Nowhere. And there was a form you had to fill out when you first enrolled your child as to their religion. And the choices were Protestant or Catholic. And that was it. Those were the only two choices. And the reason why was because they have religion classes in Germany. And you get to study the history of Protestantism and Catholicism. And what was interesting was that the evangelical, really whipped up religion that you see in the United States is so common. I saw no evidence of anywhere, and I'm sure it's there, and I'm sure there's evangelicals in Europe, but all the studies show that Europeans consider themselves spiritual, they consider themselves religious, but not by the standards of particularly the poorer areas of America. And I think that what you find is that the type of religion that is most likely to be angry, intolerant, and when pushed into the corner, violent, is that faction of religion right across the board, regardless of the name attached to it, is that faction of religion that has evolved or grown or blossomed out of poverty and oppression, mm-hmm.
I don't see the. You mentioned that the more extreme religions here in this country, might be more relegated to the poorer communities. And I think what you're saying is probably the South
I think it's all over the country because we're seeing the wiping out of the middle class by the economic policies of this government over the last 20 years.
Well, that's a whole other discussion. But I guess what I'm going to say is that even though I agree with you that there's fundamentalists on both sides, without a doubt, I don't see with the exception of some of these fringe supremacist groups that disguise themselves as religions. But with the exception of those, I don't see fundamentalist Christians calling for the eradication of other religions. Whereas I see fundamentalist Muslims doing that, calling for the eradication of all others.
I think the number two points. Number one, there are fundamentalist Christians who are calling for the cultural eradication of other groups. Check out New Tribes Mission. Plug New Tribes Mission into Google and check it out. There are huge evangelical and charismatic groups that are trying to basically wipe out other cultures. Now, they're not trying to kill people; they're trying to convert them.
Right.
But it is a form of cultural genocide.
But it's trying to convince them. Not saying if you don't convert, we're gonna kill you.
Well, sometimes the incentives that are offered are really quite substantial. But the point that I was making is that I think that if we were to use your example, wave a wand and Palestine, and all the settlements in the West Bank vanished, and you were able to turn that into Palestine, and it wasn't, and the Palestinian-Israeli situation was solved, and we were to go into there. I mean, we're giving, I forget the numbers now, I think it's $11 billion a year to Israel and $8 to $10 billion a year to Egypt, which started with the Egyptian-Israeli Accord way back when. And if we were to give that kind of support to the world, the international community were to give that kind of support to that new emerging Palestinian nation, mm-hmm. so that it had an opportunity to experience the kind of prosperity that causes people to not turn to religious fanaticism as their place of last resort for, you know, to get out of the box that they find themselves in. I think it's entirely possible that the rationale that some in this administration back in 1998 used for attacking Iraq and turning it into a democracy, that it would then become, you know, the domino theory, that it would then become contagious, that might actually happen. I frankly don't think it's going to happen out of Iraq, or at least not quickly. Odds are, given that you've got these three factions that all hate each other in Iraq, you know, if you want parallels, it's probably going to be more like Saudi Arabia or Iran, you know, with the Shah of Iran when we installed him.
Right.
But I think that a successful Palestinian state that very rapidly made the transition to a middle-class successful Palestinian state could very easily be the yeast that would ferment into democracy throughout the Middle East. I really believe that.
Well,
and I spent a lot of time there, and I know a lot of those people.
Right.
So, you know, it's that. I
would hope that it would. I'm just not so sure that anything would overcome the religious fanaticism that's prevalent there. So,
yeah,
one other quick comment.
Sure.
You talked about the administration versus the environment and whatnot, and I'd like to paraphrase P.J. O'Rourke. Some years ago, he wrote that when the Republicans rape and pillage the environment, they at least make a buck out of it. The Democrats just do it for fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's... one way or the other, it's going to be screwed up. So,
yeah, well, actually, you know, Bill Clinton did, there's a lot you can criticize him for, but environmental protections there were a lot of environmental protections that were put into place, a lot of them just undone by fiat, by the Bush administration, as soon as old George got into power.
Yeah, but they were put in by fiat as well.
I mean,
the same thing. And to be honest with you, being from a part of the country that was very affected by a lot of those, heavy-handed turning these areas into protected areas. I got to tell you that, you know, there's really nothing all that spectacular about them. There's no reason why a lot of those areas couldn't be developed in a responsible way, especially, you know, like the Escalante area down in Utah.
Yeah, well, I'll take your word for that, Greg. I'm not, you know, I haven't spent that much time in your part of the country to know, but thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I appreciate your comments, and always good to hear from Montana. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Let's see what's going on downstairs.
The treaty. We tried to negotiate within the treaty and within the language.
Okay, I'm not sure who it is and what they're talking about. So we'll go to Joe driving through Florida. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm now getting to enjoy your show because I have the Sirius satellite system in my truck, and it's so cool.
Oh, that's great, Joe. But you also need to agitate with your local radio station and let them know that they should be carrying us, too.
Darn right. Well, I'm going to carry you on my website, so we're going to get you out there.
Super.
The reason I'm calling is a couple of things. Your book on bringing out corporate America and so forth. I'm running for U.S. Senate in Utah in 2004, and that's one of my main thrusts is getting corporations and special interests out of Washington. It's hard to deal with any of these issues as long as we've got all those influences in there. Getting in the way of the process of being able to make this a country that I think addresses the issues with some history and some sense of what's going on. Your last caller, you know, was understanding why the world doesn't hate us. You know, it's the politics, it's the corporate influence around the world, it's Unocal in Burma and people being used and forced to build their pipelines.
Across Afghanistan.
Huh?
Across Afghanistan now.
And across Afghanistan. And see, we live in this vacuum here in this country where, we have a media that's fluffing stuff. It doesn't talk about anything. I mean, how much Kobe Bryant can you take before you say, well, there's a wag the dog? You know, I mean, there's stuff going on that's real. And what we get instead as far as mainstream media is fluffing stuff and wag the dog and not the eyes and ears of the nation as they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so meanwhile, we've got all these corporate initiatives going on all around the world in the name of America, such as you can go back to 52. If you want to go back to the Middle East, go to Iran. You know, we deposed Mohammad Mossadegh, who had formed a democracy fledgling democracy, and we destroyed it with our CIA, with Kermit Roosevelt and Norman Schwarzkopf's dad, and millions of dollars, getting these guys to go out and protest in the streets and depose and replace them with the Shah.
And keep in mind that the reality is that we did that thinking that it was the best thing.
Yeah, you know, and Truman understood when the British first went to him and they said, hey, we need to get rid of this guy because he wants, it was all about the oil. You know, most of it was just trying to create some environment to negotiate a fairer balanced relationship to their resource for his people so that they could build their community. And the British didn't want to let go and create an equitable relationship, so they tried to depose him. And so they went to Truman, and after he cast him, they kicked him out and closed their embassy. And Truman said, no. He was so wise. I wish he was around today. I wish his ability to understand. He said, replacing any regime is dangerous. You don't know where it's going to take you. Well, now we know where it's going to take us, because I can tell you right now, I feel quite confident, in having learned that there, you kill tens of, when you want to replace them with the Shah, and tens of thousands of people were killed by this man or the people under him, which means that it was millions of people affected that are very angry.
Oh, yeah.
And that they didn't kill everybody in the embassy when they finally got rid of him and deposed the Shah with a fundamentalist form of government, which is all that was left to them. They knew the United States wasn't going to allow a democracy, so they went with something.
Joe, we're seeing the same thing in Iraq right now. I mean, somewhere between 5 and 25 people a day. It's really hard to get the news reports because the military doesn't report it. But basically between 5 and 25 Iraqi civilians or maybe combatants or maybe not, but certainly, you know, a good percentage of them are actually completely innocent people, are being killed every day. Not because our guys over there are nasty people or anything, but they're scared. You get a bunch of teenagers who are scared to death, and they shoot at anything that moves. And those people all have mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and families, and they're getting crazed. I mean, they are just, you know, there's so many Iraqis now have died that every, you know, you reach a certain point. You know, it's like as the British in America in 1773, you reach a certain point where everybody knows somebody who's been burned, you know?
That's right. And, you know, for us,
Joe, we got 5 seconds here left.
The problem is we have tunnel vision in this country, and we don't have an empathy for understanding that what they don't like is what we don't like either. I wouldn't want occupation or killing, or I'd be in the same
boat. We all have the same very highest values. Joe, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Excellent, excellent points. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like a...
Okay, up there.
You'll sleep like
Need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Americans. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show. We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius satellite radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is we have to, I mean, I think Al Franken's right in that we have to, we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live from the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference in Washington, D.C., put on by the Center for American Progress and the American Prospect Magazine and the Century Foundation, the sponsoring organizations doing some good work here. This is John Podesta's think tank, as it's often referred to, and just some tremendous potential and some extraordinary people that they have been successful in bringing together here. Our program today, produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, and Stephanie Stryker has been running the board for us, doing the engineering down there in Detroit, and Bill Vellner spent an hour and a half with me before we got on the air trying to get this contraption working, and thank goodness it finally did, thanks to all of you. Back to this thing about selling Iraqis on selling Iraq. This, I think it's fascinating. You know, it's interesting how one of the Wall Street Journal, one of the reasons that I actually go out of my way to read the Wall Street Journal and Barron's and Forbes and Business Week is because when the corporate elites in America are talking to themselves, they tend to exhibit a level of honesty that, you know, because they just figure, and nobody's reading this except us, right? That is just sometimes quite startling. Here, this article today, Selling Iraqis on Selling Iraq, is about how Iraqis are starting to now flame back at the United States and say, hey, wait a minute, you came in here and you kicked out Saddam. That's okay. We're not upset about that. We're not, you know, maybe you did it in a way that could have been handled better. We didn't appreciate those cluster bombs. We're not all that happy about all of our people in the hospitals and all the people, the 10, 20,000 civilians who died. We're not sure it was all togetherness. But, you know, Saddam is gone. We're happy. But now you're coming in
And you're telling American corporations that they can buy up our businesses for pennies on the dollar. They can repatriate. That is, they can take out of the country all of the profits. They don't have to make any further investments. They don't have to have partners. You know, typically, most countries in the world, in Japan, for example, if you want to do business in Japan, if you want to set up shop in Japan, you've got to have a partner in Japan who owns 49% of the business. And here in the Wall Street Journal, they're talking about Iraq's business community isn't pleased. One of the Iraqi American businessmen says this gives ammunition to the extremists who say the war was all about U.S. companies taking over Iraq. Did we go to war with Iraq just for the loot? A lot of Iraqis are starting to think so. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Tag, you're it. Pass the word along. Spread it along and spread the good news. And come on back here, same time, same place. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting again.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.